Okay, we're going to... We are one day away from Sukkot. And I think we discussed in the past the Sukkah itself. But one thing we have not discussed is the Lulav. So let me give you a situation which happens to us literally every year. We run a beginner service. Generally, the way that people come into the organization is friends bring friends. Imagine you're an unaffiliated Jew and you are brought to a Sukkot morning service. Okay? And you come in there, and fortunately this year, by the way, we actually sell lulavim sets to our participants at a reduced subsidized level because we want them to be involved in the mitzvah. So you're going to have about 120 people with 50, 60 lulav sets. People are doing the lulav thing. And a person looks at this and like, they're taking it out, they're brandishing the branch, they got the lemon-like item there with the things, and they're starting to shake it around, you know, shaking it here, there, and everywhere. And what do you think to the to the regular educated person who's not an observant Jew, what do you think that looks like to them? A dance, okay. What else?
It's like idol worship.
Okay. Dave, with a blunt point there. Idol worship. Okay, well, they're not worshiping the... You're not worshiping the lulav bundle, the lulav bouquet, shall
like
I say.
Like a superstitious activity, throwing something over your shoulders.
All right, a little superstitious thing. Okay, what else? What else? Yeah, it looks primitive. Anywhere you slice it, right? Right, Dave, would you agree with that? Well, you went with a vote of Zora, so you definitely agree with that.
Absolutely.
All right, so it looks weird, and I will even go a step further, because I'm the kind of guy that likes to go a step further. I think observant Jews themselves feel a little bit uncomfortable with the lulav mitzvah in general. They feel a little weird. They have sort of like... They look at it as sort of like a weird thing themselves. They're not quite sure why they're doing this. And as such, they view it as they're a little bit suspicious themselves. I wonder, is this really... what the heck is this? So, Gary, what would you say, man?
I would say it definitely sounds like something out of the Golden Bough.
Right.
Casual observer.
All right, so there it looks like. So you're referring to Sir Frazier. Yeah, what's his name? Jack, Jim, Richard. I don't know. Frazier, and who in the turn of the century wrote the first book of anthropology, which he basically identified ancient rituals, most of them, you know, fertility based. Which then metastasized through the ages and found itself into the modern Western world. And his basic point is that Western man thinks he's so advanced and so removed, and he looks down disparagingly at the primitive world. In reality, it's the same primitiveness that's just has changed form. But many of the same activities are still alive and well. One of the things called is a sympathetic magic, which is the idea that you can see qualities of one object, and through a certain unique activity, you can then transfer the qualities to the other one. The most extreme example was in the primitive world, in certain tribes, they would have a couple that had many children, would have them make love in a person's field who's worried about having a good return on his crops. So the fertility of the couple would be transferred to the field. And other activities like this. So this is, this is very strange. And in fact, there are statements from the Gemara that on the surface also even add to that. That why do you wave them in the different directions? Latzor ruchot ra'ot v'talim ra'im. To hold back dangerous winds and bad quantities of rain. You know, inopportune times of rain. So it seems to be, this is, even from the latter rabbinic Judaism part, quote unquote, seems that this is, this is the lull of his magic wand. Alright, so I think that has to be addressed. Alright, so the way we are, our first stop obviously is the Chumash, and where the mitzvah is introduced, is expressed, is in the 23rd chapter of Vayikra, and is, we can bring it up. Let's just all right. All right, we have a little awesome cell phone ringtone going on in the background. Okay. We're going to jump in a little bit in the middle here. We're going to go to the 39th pasuk there. Who would like to read? We're going to read two psukim, three psukim.
Second.
Go ahead, roll them.
23:39 in Vayikra.
Dead. Great. Translate.
But on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you gather in the crop of the land, you will celebrate Hashem's festival for 7 days. The first day is a rest day, and the 8th day is a rest day.
All right, you're good? Go for
another one. You shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of a citron tree.
Well, okay, that. But the plain shot is the fruit of the beautiful tree, or the fruit of the beautiful fruit of the beautiful fruit. The pre Eitz Hadar is the fruit of the beautiful tree, which we know is okay. Which we're Torah Shel Peh tells you is the Esra. Go on.
The branches of dates.
Yeah, date palm branch.
Date palm branches, twigs of. Anyone translate Eitz Avos?
A woven, you know, a
woven
thickly
tree.
Thickly leaved tree.
And willow branches. And you will rejoice before Hashem your God for 7 days.
Good. All right, let's just do two more. So we'll finish up the entire unit.
Good. You will celebrate it as a holiday for Hashem. 7 days in the year, a law for your generations. In the 7th month, you will celebrate it.
Good.
Basuko teshvu shivas yami. Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yashvu basuko. Yeshvu basuko.
Good.
You shall live in the Sukkot for 7 days. Everyone who is
a citizen of Israel,
shall dwell in the Sukkot. So that your generations will know that I caused the children of Israel to live in booths when I took them from the land of Egypt. I am Hashem, your God.
Okay.
And Moses
made
this declaration.
Good.
All right, so we're
introduced to the holiday of Sukkot. And we're told that that we have to take for yourself on the first day these four species, and you're to rejoice before Hashem, your God, for 7 days. So interestingly enough, this bouquet, it's not simply a bouquet, you have to just simply take it, you need to rejoice with it. So the first question is, whatever the thing is, how is this a tool of rejoicing? Okay? You know, and it's interesting. It's now the Lifnei Hashem, according to the Torah, where Lifnei Hashem is used in a couple of senses. It can either be A, referring to a special holy day, like Yom Kippur is Lifnei Hashem Tetaru, right? We had that last week. And then you have Lifnei Hashem that's wrong, talking about Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu, talking about the Mikdash. So interestingly, you have this weird dichotomy by Lulav. By Lulav, if you're not in the Mikdash, how many days do you take it? Going to the Pasuk. Katan Lachem Bayam Rishon. Dave, how many days do you take the Lulav if you're not in the Mikdash from the Torah?
One.
One is correct. Bing. The Sukkah. How many days is the one obligated to be in the Sukkah? Live in the Sukkah?
Seven.
Does it make a difference if you're in the Mikdash or not? Doesn't mention that. So, again, question off the top. If you're in the Mikdash, you do the Lulav 7 days. If you're not in the Mikdash, you do the Lulav 1 day. Sukkah doesn't make a difference. Right? Odd. What else? It says also that the Esrog has to be what quality? Hadar. What does Hadar mean?
Beautiful.
And according to Tershal Peh, that applies to all the four species. They got to be beautiful. I mean, they can't be dried out. They can't be ripped up. They got to be a bouquet looking good. Okay? So, how's that fit into the whole? Why is that necessary? If I got to take the species, I'm going to take these species. Got to be Hadar, too. What's up with that? Next. Sidlakatim Lachem. You should take for yourself. The classic Tershal Peh is that, what does that Lachem mean? Anybody know? Lachem? What is it going on? Go ahead, Dave. Jumping all over it.
Has to be your own.
Yeah, lachem. Mish lachem. Has to be of your own. Has to be. You have to possess it. You cannot borrow somebody's lulav to fill your biblical obligation of lulav. For the first day, and possibly if you're in the Mikdash, all 7 days. Yes,
for
question.
Households or like per person?
Per person. Mish lachem. Has to be your own. You got to own it. It's got to be yours. Okay? So, So we have our questions here. And,
even during a recession.
Even during a recession.
Does it say for men or for women? Because I know, like, I don't...
Ah! Good question. So it doesn't specify at all, but we know a general principle that it's a mitzvah seish mangrama. It's a day... This mitzvah is limits either the first day of Sukkot or in the time of the Mikdash, the 7 days. So for the time-bound mitzvah, for a woman, it's an optional thing. If she wants to makai the mitzvah, she can. If she does not want to makai the mitzvah, she doesn't have to. And there's no lack. I personally buy a little set for my little daughter, Viva, not because I want to teach her about doing mitzvah seish mangrama, because if all the guys are doing the lulav, she will burst into tears because she feels left out. So I bought a little set that she should do the mitzvah. But, you know, it's a nice thing, but a woman has no obligation to do that. And if you're not going to burst into tears, you don't have to get one.
Yeah. So we have a question based on that.
Yeah.
So insofar as the woman is not chayiv in the mitzvah, but
yeah,
she wants to be mekayim in the mitzvah.
Yep.
So for the, does she have a kiyuma mitzvah on the first day if she's using a lulav that does not belong to her?
No.
Or is that, she does
no,
not
it's part of the mitzvah. What you have to do is what the Shulchan Aruch says. You have to machne it to the person. You have to give it as a gift to the person. Now you can allow. There's a thing called matana manas lahasir. I'm giving you a conditional gift. Now that level, I'm not going to that halachic complication, but that level of ownership of that you have a temporary gift. It's a gift for you, but you have to give it back. How exactly that works? I'm not going to go into that whole factor.
Without getting into the theoretical idea behind it, as a practical matter, if a father in his household has a lulav and wants to give it to a female member of the house, they want to be mekayem the mitzvah on the first day,
right,
how does one accomplish this? What does he do?
So what they do is that after the guy has niyotzeh his mitzvah, then he will give it as a gift to whoever wants to give it to this. This is yours. This belongs to you fully. Hand to the person. That's it. And the person wants to give. And then after that, there's no problem, because from day two onward, we only do it as a zecher, as a commemoration to the Mikdash. And therefore, does not require lachem. Requires just the when the Chachamim came along to make this Zecher, they didn't include all the halachic full features. Now, they didn't give you, they didn't obligate the deluxe responsibility, so therefore you can use a borrowed one. So at that point, it doesn't make a difference who owns it. That's it.
So can she give it back to the back to him after she performs the mitzvah that day?
Yeah, sure. But my point being is that if you yotze the mitzvah and then you give it to her as a gift, and then she's yotze it, and then from the next day, everybody can use it because a borrowed one is 100% good. And everybody, that's it. That's the way to work it. Okay, so we're going to... We have four questions here. Okay, we have the general question is what the heck is a lulav in general, but specifically there are four qualities you want to understand. One is why lulav one day and sukkah is 7 days. A, all right, that's the A. B is why is it why do you require the quality has to be yours? Why does it have to be beautiful? Okay, what's the idea of the taking of the lulav only has to be lifnei Hashem? Why is that a requirement? You don't have an idea. I'm only put on tefillin lifnei Hashem. What's the lifnei Hashem factor? Why is that such an important quality? Okay, right. So these are the four difficulties. And I think if we understand lulav, and these are our problems. This is the text. We're going to develop a theory to explain all these. These problems emerge from us not understanding the core object of the mitzvah, what it is intrinsically, and then how the mitzvah uses it therapeutically for the Jew. Okay? These ideas I got from, I was learning this with Rabbi Yoni Sachs, and these are his kiddushim. Unless they stink, then as my lack of presenting them. Okay. I want to first take you on a little tour here. Has anybody here been to a state fair? Anybody been to a state fair? You know what I'm talking about a state fair is? You guys are a bunch of city slickers. You know what a state fair? Have you ever been to a state fair? You've been to a state fair. You're going to get a lot of town. So, just by those who are not acquainted, the state fair is a big deal, specifically in parts of America which farm life and agriculture is significant. Even upstate New York has these things. You know, more and more rural areas. What happens at a state fair? It's an opportunity for the farmers to present their very best pumpkins and other biggest pig, biggest cow, and their or any of the, you know, cheese. It could be any kind of agricultural product, produce, or animal from the farm. Okay, and you have the 4-H club where they actually give awards. And, you know, it's on cable. You know, you don't have to go to a farm. You can watch them. It's a big deal. And you go, and each person has a booth. And in the booth, they display the richness of their harvest. Typically, it's done now. Right now through, in October is the classic month. And we'll do it in a minute. Where the big, you know, August, September, October. And they'll show the depth and fullness of their harvest. Okay? So, when the guy is holding this big pumpkin, or standing to his pumpkin, which weighs 1,000 pounds, okay, what's his experience there? What is he doing? Why is he there? Why is he doing all the hassle to schlep his big pumpkin to the county fair? What is he doing? Why and what is he doing and why is he doing it?
Showing off that
energy,
he was able to grow
his. Okay, so one is to. So one thing is that he was successful to. So it's pure. It's, well, what is that for him? That is his trophy. It's no different than a guy, you know, lifting up the Stanley Cup at the end of the when they win the championship, or the PGA Tour holding up the big trophy. Or it's a triumphant victory of of expressing in a conspicuous manner his success. Because not only, because again, the producing of this pumpkin, or the watermelon, or the big apples, whatever it is, was against all odds. He was out there, schwitzing in the sun, you know, watering and nurturing these produce. And no doubt there was bugs, and there was all kinds of, and there was drought, there was all kinds of stuff that was, it was man against nature. And he was down in there, and he was fighting it out, and he came up, and he lifts this big fruit as an act of a triumphant thing, and made it. Against all odds, we have victory here. Okay? And same thing as a guy who's lifting up the Stanley Cup. He's picking up the trophy. We had a season of battle, and this is it.
David was a gardener.
A gardener also, but
saying David was a gardener.
Dave, is it resonating?
Oh yeah.
Okay. so obviously you brought in from the backyard the large beefsteak tomato that had came in massive. You know, and everybody's looking at it and oohing and aahing, and then as before you slice it up to make it a delicious add to the salad. You know what I mean? And the fact that it didn't get eaten by a worm, and you know, there's a victorious thrill. In a certain sense, it is a symbolic of your advertising success of your season, whether it be in sports. That's not limited to that. What other trophies do we see in modern life?
Spouses.
Right? What we call that, the term in America called the trophy wife. What is a trophy wife?
Oh!
I'm not going to repeat it. Yeah, but it was funny. You'll have to listen to it online.
It's going to be online?
Yeah, we'll put it all up. I'll put it up.
All right.
So, in other words, the trophy wife is displayed regularly. Even not just at the end of the season, but throughout the whole year. Why? He wants to show, in a conspicuous manner, the absolute completeness of his success. Correct? Now, what are the two qualities of a trophy? There are two qualities that have to make it a good trophy.
It's
got to
be big.
Okay. It doesn't have to be. Well, the bigness is really to make it conspicuous. You know, if you say, here's my little trophy, it doesn't measure such a large thing of success. What is a more other quality of, if you're advertising success, what qualities must it have, the trophy must have, for sure? Not limited to size. But size size makes it, is helpful in certain realms. For example, a guy has, you know, the dream house. So size does make a difference because he wants to make it conspicuous. If you have a little house, nobody can see it, then you're not advertising your success that well, are you?
Right.
The only person drives by and does not hit the brakes to look at the monstrosity that is creating a shadow over the entire street. You're not doing your job. It's got to be. So that's because it needs to be evident to the eye. But not every field of struggle is measured in size. Okay? So, what quality, but it's true to all of them? It's got to be beautiful. You're going to have, here's my ugly trophy wife? I don't think so. Here is my burnished, dented, tilted PGA Tour trophy? No, I don't think so. That's not measuring so much success. That's a success of loserness. You know? Loserosity. Right? So that's not working. Because the key thing really is not only that, but it's really the idea of a simcha. What is simcha? We define a time for is really, the simcha really means is that is the simcha is that taking that satisfaction in the absolute completeness of your success. Right? So when the guy's there holding the Stanley Cup over his head, he is taking massive satisfaction over it. He's just enjoying the heck out of that. He's radiant. He's like a virtual Christmas tree of beaming in the satisfaction of the completeness of his absolute success. All the training, all the hard work against difficult situations, bad calls by the referee, injuries, the whole nine yards. Here it is. Right here. So it's got to be A, quality number one. It's got to be beautiful, that trophy, or else it will not reflect true success. And two, it's got to demonstrate their dominance, their body, their absolute dominance over the situation. Who did it? We did it. Whose pumpkin is that? It's my pumpkin. Whose wife is that? It's my wife. It's my wife. Whose house is that? My house. Alright, the bile is the other feature of this whole
symptom. It's gotta represent what?
Two things. Gotta be beautiful, and it's gotta be discernibly yours. When a person does a conspicuous demonstration of control, of his completeness and success, it's gotta be evident. Now we understand what the Lola is. The Lola is the victory bundle of the harvest. It represents actual success. The pasuk that right before the Lakhan, what holiday is it? Chag Asif. It's the harvest time. If you are in Israel right now, all you have, it is time of the rimonim. Boom. The grapes in season. Boom. All the things are coming together now. So if you were, you know, you have it today in Israel, the beautiful white Israeli food, produce is so awesome because it's extremely local. You're going to eat, you sit down to a salad, every part of that salad was picked within 5 miles of your restaurant table. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like I'm going outside and I'm giving you the salad right there. So you go around to any of the kibbutzim or the moshavim where they have, where they're doing that, and you, it's very close by. Right now is when they're having their harvest. Chag Asif is always in line with the Torah's cycle, and there's a natural feeling to demonstrate, like Dave talking about his awesome beef steak tomato, to demonstrate that success in a conspicuous manner as a trophy. Now I can understand why is Lulav always this Nash. Either Lifnei Hashem of the Yantif or Lifnei Hashem of the Mikdash. Why is that? It's a basic idea, you know it already.
It's like trust the idea that this, like, this isn't a harvest day, you know, like this victory.
This victory bundle, yeah. This victory bouquet.
Is, you know, is really coming from that.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. That the person is only allowed to have the victory, the agricultural trophy, the victory bouquet, if he's in a Lifnei Hashem framework. Either the Yom is Lifnei Hashem, or he's in the Makom Lifnei Hashem, or he makes it evident that he is saying that what? This tremendous success is emerging from Birchas Hashem, God's blessing, God's Hashkafa to Klal Yisrael, and this is a part of that. It's really an antidote to the natural feeling of Kochi Vosam Yodis Asafalazeh, that the power of my hand produces the success. So, that's what it is. Now you understand, why does a lulav have to be hadar, have to be beautiful? Because otherwise it wouldn't be a brute. It's supposed to be the victory bundle. It's supposed to be the victory bouquet. And why do you have to own it? Because you've got to have that, you can't have this is my borrowed trophy. I mean, you know, you're going to borrow a trophy? That's humiliating because it makes it evident that you're really a loser because you don't have your own trophy. So it has to be your own because they want to take that success, that desire to communicate, publicize your success with a demonstrative sampling of your produce, you know, representative of your produce. It's got to be turned around. Why is Chag Asif 5 days after Yom Kippur? talk about the end of our session on Yom Kippur. The essence of Yom Kippur is a person should be a shav.
Supposed to be what?
Should be a shav. A person who has done teshuvah, who has returned. Whether he's done one, he's done teshuvah on one thing, or 100 things, or 1,000, doesn't make a difference. There's an idea of being a shav. A shav is not... One thing the Rambam says, I'm going to read you the Rambam. The shav does not end when he eats that bagel at the end of Yom Kippur. He now takes that identity, and he's now goes the rest of the year and the rest of his life with that mentality. I'm going to read you an interesting Rambam. This Rambam can be found in the second parak of Hilchos Teshuvah.
Did you say
a shav? Shav. Shav means a person who has done teshuvah. A returnee. Okay, or what you want to call a baal teshuvah. Okay, so the Rambam says like this in the second chapter in the fourth halacha. He says, Midarki ha-teshuvah is the ways of the teshuvah. Lios ha-shav, the returnee, so iktamet, lifnei Hashem, bebechi v'tachnunim, that he's crying continuously before God, with crying and supplications, requests. So Oset Tzedakah Kefikocho, and he gives charity to the extent that he financially can. U'misrachik harbe min adavar shechatabo, and he's bringing great distance away from the thing that he'd sinned with. In other words, he's not allowed to get into the situation where the triggers of the sin are going to embrace him, and then he might slip and fall again. He's extremely... The Rambam says, what is true more that if he was in such a situation, he would still hold strong based upon his new self-identity and conviction. But he's not. He understands that man is a weak creature. He's not going to, do the same thing. Mishana Shemo, and he changed his name. Klomer, that is to say, Ani Acher, I am someone else. The Eini Oso Ish Oso Osana Maisim. I am not that guy did it. I'm a different guy. I know people like this, brother. Mishana Maisav Kulam Latova, and he changes all of his actions for the good. Uladerach Yishara, and in the straight path. The Golem and Koma, and he goes into diaspora. He checks out. He's leaving. He's on the road. Why? Shegalut Mechaperet Avom Ibnei Shegremet Lolachnia Uliot Anav Veshval Ruach. Because being in self-imposed exile is an atonement for the sin, because it caused him to be to humble himself and to be a humble person and of low spirit. So you see already there's an idea of the shav. It's not simply he corrected the actions and now life is back to normal. He is now engaged in, he's done with the tshuva, derech tshuva. There's tshuva and there's a darkia tshuva. What's the essence of the sukkah? One, from this perspective, you can see that 5 days after the sukkah, where is he going? Self-imposed bellus. What is the home? We talked about it before. The home is your power base. My home is my castle. I'm the king. So there's recognition of Rosh Hashanah, of the true Melech, and the alignment to the dictates of the true Melech on Yom Kippur. He now is continuing that. Now he's not doing tshuva anymore. He's done with that. He's now in Darkei Tshuva. He leaves, he evacuates the house. He moves out. He's now living in the hut. Beside the house. Next to the house. So really, why? Lachnia the Leif. Now, what are you supposed to think about? You know, there was a time when the Jewish people were wandering around the desert, and they were in the desert. They were completely vulnerable. And it was only the Chazei Hashem that protected them for 40 years. So it says that. So he looks at his house. You know that house? Even though it feels very permanent, it doesn't have to be there. The success I have doesn't have to be there. Here today, gone tomorrow. House can go into foreclosure. Out in the street, could happen. Many people in America never thought it was going to happen. Literally, hundreds of thousands of people have been evicted from their homes in the last year or two. All right, that house is not intrinsically mine. It's not intrinsically part of my identity. It's not who I am. So, so therefore, as an expression of the Darkei Tshuva, person leaves the bias and goes to a self-imposed exile to machnia the leif. Because quite frankly, being in the sukkah, if you're doing the mitzvah in its full, not just eating there, like on occasional picnic cabana experience, which is good. But living there, sleeping there, and that's really the major transformation, it stinks because it's not the house. It's built to be to maintain that vulnerable state.
You know, you worry, is it raining tonight? Is it not raining tonight? Was it going to be down cold? Is it going to be mosquitoes?
Yeah, it's not really, it's not that great. I mean, luckily, obviously you're from a stire. I mean, if it's going to shatter your simchas yontif, then it's not a yeshiva. But if it's not, it's still, even when it's good, it's not that good. Even when it's good, it ain't that good.
So that's the philosophy behind it, then.
Well, every
man, women, like also.
One could argue not. Or you could say you could, there's two general approaches for mitzvah seishas megra. Mitzvah saseh, the nashim are pituros from mitzvah seishas megra. One, really, it'd be fantastic, but it would be unjust for the Torah to mandate women to do a halachic activity which are so time sensitive. To a woman who becomes, during a big portion of her life, not the ruler of her time. You have kids, you're up. You can't, you gotta feed them. You don't have that freedom. That's one thing. So it would be, really, one possibility, they would get the benefit, but being that they have, in a certain sense, a superior obligation of being the primary body masorah to the next children, and therefore that doesn't mean they don't have the freedom of time. It would be unjust for the Torah to obligate them to be, you need to say Shema by this time. Even though your kids are crying and they're pitching on the floor. Okay? Yeah. Get some kavanah together. Okay? That's not realistic. That's one approach. Second approach is that it's not the design of these couple of mitzvahs are not transformational for them. One could argue that a woman's ego is not really expressed by, this is my house, and this is my stuff. These are my possessions as much as it is for the God. That's why, for a woman, Mishnah says, Voda bas melech pnima. The glory of the daughter of the king is inside, which is that for a woman, the idea that could be a greater source of perfection is the realm of tzniut. Why? Because what is a woman's ego? That I'm appreciated as the most hottest, sexiest being on the in the street. Does anybody look at me? Sound great? So if they have to withdraw from that ego, from that heroin like addictiveness of I am Mrs. Awesome, it is a massive perfection. And there's a lot of struggle there. Very hard. Because that's the easiest way for the woman to get you gratification. Yeah, it applies a little bit, but it's not giving them a guy rather talk about how many deals he closed versus, his haircut. A little bit, but it's not floating his boat that much. Yeah, I got the suit tie. Okay. Yeah, I think it's, but talk about his promotion, what he's doing at work, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. You should have seen me there, I was doing this, and over there, I was on the court, I was doing this, I was doing that. It's all the realm of accomplishment. External accomplishment and showing dominance over the other guy, that all the other guys are wussies, incapable losers, and I'm the real guy, and they're a bunch of women. Alright, would you say, Sam, that really is the man? That's really, that gets the guy excited. Now you're talking, right?
I would not say that.
No, I'm talking about, not you, but I mean, other guys, but I'm talking about mankind in general. We'll get them excited.
Eventually, I can see that.
Okay, good. So we just want to get a little clarification there. Okay. So,
that's his ego
trafficking. Okay.
Not him.
I'm not the guy. I'm not the other guy. Right.
My wife.
Right.
Everyone thinks that way. Now I can't.
Exactly. So, to put this all together, so part of the Shav is expressing in two ways. One is that when he brings his trophy of absolute financial, in this case, agricultural success, it has to be lifnei Hashem. To reframe that is that he's a beneficiary of bracha. See, that really is, and he goes into the sukkah because he's in galus, because he's showing the dark age Jew, because he's reflecting on the
the higher principle that Hashem A, exists, and therefore he does nothing to the Klal Yisrael. Those are the more fundamental principles. And then on the Midos level, that he has no right to be a he has no justification to feel like he's the man, because the truth is, it's he's holding on by three strings. He's holding on by three strings. And remember, if we all remember, go back to 2 years ago, right after Rosh Hashanah, we had the big collapse of the market, and people were mamish devastated because they just saw 30% of their wealth eviscerated in 1 day, 2 days. You know, and that person, you know, they're not walking tall and like a big shot. They're feeling pretty. They're feeling you know, 28 cents short of a quarter. So, that idea is the idea, the sentiment of the Shah. He sees himself realistically. So really, Sukkot has two extremes, two sides of the same coin. There's the Ava. There's the love part. There's the attraction toward Hashem's, appreciating Hashem's goodness. It's a simcha. The simcha is I'm reflecting on the completeness of my success, and I feel great. And this is the bracha that Hashem has given us. Now it's in a mode where it becomes tempered and directed properly, which is good. So there's a positive reflecting on the simcha. That's why everybody is together, and there's simchas yontif, and there's food, and there's new clothing, and everybody's feeling great, and there's sort of rejoicing in the completeness that the bracha thing. That's emerging from the Ava, and therefore, what do we do with that lulav? We say hallel with it. On the other hand, we say also Anashim Hashemah. Hashem gives save us and breed success. We show that fragility and vulnerability simultaneously, because we can't. That everything has to be tempered. And where do we? And in the Mikdash, where do they do the hakafa? Where do they do the hakafa? Anybody know?
Burger.
Where?
Burger.
Nope. Around what object did the in the time of the Mikdash do the Jewish people do hakafa around? It's a one-word answer. Only time of year that a regular Jew, a non-Kohen, allowed to enter into the precinct of the part which is allowed for the Kohen. The Jew is allowed to walk around the Mizbeach, because the Lulav is part of the Avoda, and he circles around the Mizbeach. What is the full name of the Mizbeach? Mizbach Kapara. It is the Mizbeach of Atonement, which... Now I understand the celebration. The part of the celebration of the Simcha, on one level, of course, is the great harvest, but ultimately is the kapara that Klal Yisrael received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu via the Avoda system. And in fact, there's a separate, additional mitzvah on the Sukkot, is to beautify the Mizbeach with large aravos, which would be, I don't know, 30 feet tall, which would go against the Mizbeach, which would then beautify it. And they say, Yofi lach Mizbeach. They say, how beautiful a Mizbeach. What's the idea? What are we deifying? A Mizbeach? So the point being is that the Ram says the place in Mizbeach was not an arbitrary location. Rather, it was the same place. It has to be identified by a Navi. And he has to tell you exactly where to build that Mizbeach. What's the Peshat Mizbeach? Why? It has to be a place where Avram did the Akedah, where Noah did the offerings after he got off the Teva, and according to the Midrash, and Midrashically, that Adam himself was created in that spot. Did it literally occur in that spot? No, but I don't know. But the bottom line is that the Chazal say Adam b'makam kaparaso nivra. Man was created in the place of his atonement. What does that mean? It means that from the very beginning, that man to exist needs God's chesed to with kapara to every year to give a chance, provide that there is growth and there's development. He's a shav, Hashem will grant him that. So the simcha also brings in that we're misameach the fact that Hashem has granted such an institution. That's why the proximity between Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, boom, 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 15 days. He had the whole thing all there. And you have two reactions. You have an Ava reaction. It is a love, praising, attractive, attracted to phenomenon of appreciating the listening to Hashem of he's providing the tremendous bounty, and ultimately beyond that, he's the source of all chokmah, even a higher perceptions. Then there's a yira, which is reflecting on our limitation, and that really is the sukkah. Sitting out there in a little vulnerable shack, hearing the wind whistling through your sock there, and you feel that little unease there. You know, can't sleep as well. You're away from some of the creature comforts by definition, and you're impacted. And to reflect the fact that God has it protected the Jews, and also that it doesn't have to be that way. The fact that we are in a great situation is not part of the design. Of the universe. We'll be here today and gone tomorrow. So therefore, that's the midos perfection of the. That's the year of Hashem that I am. I lack. I don't control my own success. So that's the idea. That's Lulav. That's Sukkah. That's Mikdash. That's the idea of the Gullus dimension. The celebration of the Yom Kippur dimension. And I think we can answer all the questions. So, how is it an instrument of simcha? Because it's a simcha of reflecting on the Birchus Hashem. It has to be only. You're not allowed to take it otherwise, because you're gonna distort it. It'll undo all the development of Russian Yom Kippur. The whole idea was to recognize his malchus. Now I'm celebrating my own malchus. I'm lifting my trophy that I'm awesome. So that is addressed. Why it has to be Hadar? Why it has to be beautiful? Why does it have to be? Why does it have to be Mishlechem? Because in order for it to be a true victory bouquet, it has to be beautiful, and it has to be showing your control of that. And why is Sukkah 7 days? Because Sukkah is not about simchas chag. It's really about it brings in the Yira dimension, the idea that we are hakol tri chemlo, everything needs Hashem, but who lo tri, and Hashem does not need anything, not one of them. And that's the experience on the midos level of the Sukkah experience, and that's why it's 5 days after Yom Kippur. It's building on the themes of Yom Kippur, building on how the Shav enters into the rest of applying it to his next development in living life in a full normal manner. Do we capture everything? Oh, the Nanuim. So the Nanuim is because now the Nanuim, the little takes on, since it's a Ava, it's an expression of the Yavoda. It's actually woven into the Yavoda service. So therefore, it's part of the tefillah, and the tefillah of the shaking. It's understanding that having the material success is really based upon Klal Yisrael's level of hashgacha pratis. And if we don't get that, if we don't make these breakthroughs, we're done. One thing that was very interesting when I was in Israel, taking the tour, our first day went to a place called Na'ot Kedumim, which is a biblical. Which is a large part where they grow all the plant life of the Tanakh, all the seven minim, and they do this and they show how they process the things in the time of the Mishnah. How do they squeeze olives? How do they crush grapes? All the different ways. How do they do the, when they talk about the 39 malachos, how were they done? It's interesting. One thing they point out that we say in Shema, Masati Matar Tatem, Yoreh Makosh. Now I'll give you the early rain, and I'll give you the late rain. How many days of rain do they have in Israel, on average? They get enough, throw out a number. Nope. How many days of rain?
5.
22 days of rain. Now, imagine. Until very, very recently, and even now, if you don't get those 22 days, does it rain at all in May, June, July, August, September? No. It does not rain at all in Israel April through September. I mean, once every 50 years. So if it does not rain in October, November, December, January, February, March, those 22 days, if you don't get those 22 days of rain, what happens?
You're
dead. You're dead. And not only because you need rain, you also need the euro, you need the rains, because in order for the crops to proper germinate, you need rain. Not just you need the rain, you need the rain at certain times. You need the early rain, you need the late rain. So even nowadays, Israel is entering their eighth year of drought, and it's a real big problem, because without the rain, the Kinneret is going dangerously low, and of course the Dead Sea is going to disappear in our lifetime, and it's a tremendous disaster. I mean, now if you can import water, you can import water from Turkey, and maybe we'll have desalination plants that'll help it, but even now, 2010, not having the rain during the rain is a disaster. So that tefillah of which comes to a crescendo on Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of Sukkot, where it's a tefillah for rain for Geshem, and the Nanuim, which is the, and you're saying Anashem Hoshiana, that's you're done. You don't, if that doesn't happen, you're really done. I like New York rains all around 12. In New York, you get rain 12 months a year. Sometimes a little more long. In Israel, you don't get that rain, you're decimated. Even today, and how much more so 100 years ago, and how much more so 2,000 years ago in the time of the Mishnah. So it's very, so when your person has the payroll's heart, he's feeling unbelievable, he's feeling ecstatic, you know what I mean? Also another thing is that there's a gamble. You harvest wheat. Where is your seed for the coming year? It's that wheat. So you have to make the following judgment. You're a commodity trader. If I plant and there's no rain, I have two losses. I'm losing my present food. I'm losing my present food, and now I'm not getting the next year's crop. But if I don't plant, I for sure will not have next year's crop, although I'll have current year. So therefore, it's a zero-sum game. I mean, we don't understand. We're one step removed. You know, we have between us and agriculture, we have a thing called a supermarket. So, we don't really. But in Israel, they are much more tied to the land than we are, because they don't have the immense resources both in agriculture like America does, with these massive agri farms and tremendous cost of importing fruits and vegetables throughout the entire world. You know, that's it. It ain't happening. It ain't happening. You're completely vulnerable. So that produces the tremendous simcha of success and the tremendous feeling of vulnerability if it ain't happening. So that puts it into a clear. That is the simcha, the tremendous simcha of Sukkot, and also there's the Av of Sukkot and there's the year of Sukkot, and they come together and they're feeding off the growth of the Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Kippur, and that's basically how, in a nutshell, and I felt that Rabbi Sachs gave a nice idea, and I wanted to share it with you guys. So I think good. Leaving any stones unturned? All right, good. I mean, there are, but I think we have a nice. All right. I wish everybody a good Yontif.
Thank you.